every time you pop up, I think about it all over again, and I go through it again and again and again.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. This is episode 73 of Lighting Up the Marquee. Got a very cool episode today, joined by Evan Kidd and Damian Elliot Bynum, the writer, director, cinematographer, editor, producer for the film Panda Barrett, as well as Damian, the star of the film. How are you guys doing?
Doing good, man.
Pretty good.
Thanks for having us on.
No problem. I think we were... So you guys, I believe, followed me on Instagram a little bit ago, but I get so backed up with a lot of things, like a lot of things to watch and a lot of things just in my normal life.
Right.
But I was like, I'm going to check it out. And I think I kept updating you. I was like, I'll watch it. Like, I got to, I was like, I need to find the time. And I found the time. I finally checked it out. And then I was really glad we were able to work out getting you guys on for this show.
Nice.
Definitely.
Like I mentioned to you guys before, we'll keep it pretty free flowing. Okay. I have some set questions, but I want to just have a discussion with you guys, talk about a whole bunch of topics. We can talk about music and film, your guys' backgrounds, the process of making Panda Barrett. I actually have the article that you had on Film Independent up, and I was going to bring up some things in that as well. But yeah, let's just jump right into it.
Let's do it.
Sounds great, man.
Let's just start out with like giving everybody a little bit of background on each of you. From your backgrounds to how you guys like met and then your like working relationship.
Definitely.
Go ahead, take
Damian,
it.
You want to take it?
Or that's you eat. That's you eat.
All right. So we met actually also via the internet. I want to say it was like 2018 through Twitter. Yeah. Yeah. And Damian had just put out his, at the time, latest Camus Leonardo album. And I'd listened to it and I really vibed with it. Quick backstory, there's, you know, tons of really dope talent in Raleigh and Durham, in North Carolina. But, you know, of course, it's always a treat to discover new music. And that's basically what happened on Twitter with the Dames album. And so once I listened through that album, you know, I reached out, saw we were following each other. And we just kind of like started talking at first about creativity, art, music. I was directing a lot of music videos at the time. So I was trying to be like, okay, let's do a music video ASAP. And he was down. And then we eventually linked up at a coffee shop. And this was like a 2-hour meeting where we basically, again, just free flowed. And we sort of talked about a music video, but the more we got to know one another, I think the more we saw similarities, interests aligning, just, you know, similar values, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And really it grew more than just the music video. And what's funny is the music video, it did eventually happen, but it never really happened. Like, that's what was so funny. Like, we talked about this panda. We're like, wouldn't it be weird if we put a panda in a music video? I don't even remember what song we were talking about. And you were just like, oh yeah, we could do that. And I was like, okay, cool. And I like that you were just down to do something surreal. And so the more we talked about it, the more I saw, you know, through your other music videos you'd made, that you had a presence on video. And I was like, well, what would you do if I like actually wrote a script and kind of tailored it? Cause we, you know, we talked about each other's life, his personal life, my personal life. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to write something that kind of fused elements of what we had both experienced plus some fictional stuff. And that basically is what ended up being Panda Barrett. Yeah. And so just off of that Twitter interaction, and then like a 2-hour coffee shop convo, we basically ended up here and I wrote the script, sent it to him. And then in fall of 2019, we shot Panda Barrett, edited through quarantine, and then released last October. So yeah, on Prime, on Amazon Prime.
That's awesome. Like when you guys did the discussion at the coffee shop, I'm sure because I always hear like these stories, and even I've done it where I go to talk to actors and the project itself is like the last thing we'll talk about, or like it like rarely comes up. Like, we'll just try to vibe off each other.
That's literally like the synopsis of our relationship, though. Like, every time we plan to do something, we just talk about everything else, but what it is that we're supposed to do. And then we have to catch ourselves and be like, oh, dang, oh, we got it. No, so it's pretty cool. It's pretty organic.
I do that all the time. Like, I'll be talking to my friends and then I'm like, oh shit, like, I forgot I want to work on this project with you. Let me text you like what I forgot. That's cool. Cause I was reading about, on the Film Independent article about, like, basically with the whole pandemic, how everything changed, and basically distributing it was a little bit of a challenge. And I know when I was talking to Aaron and Justin with their film Synchronic, they were having the very similar issues with distributing it. What was the whole end goal with kind of distributing it? Because it ended up on Amazon Prime. Was it always going to end up like streaming, or were you going to try to have it in some like some theaters?
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, like, all filmmakers and really artists, musicians, like everyone, even if you're not an art, I mean, everyone's obviously impacted by what's happening with COVID. But obviously in our situation, we had originally planned to really hype it up. As you know, Damien is an artist, he's a musician. So we had talked about doing like a theatrical screening and also a live concert with music that he was going to do. And it was just going to be almost like a party. And we can still do that one day. And like, that's kind of the goal, is like, you know, in a world, eventually I'd love to get back around there. And it can almost just be like, oh, we made it. But, you know, at that point, we're still looking in the future. So, you know, it is bittersweet. Like, you know, it's not the way exactly I wanted to put out Panda Barrett, but obviously everyone else is in the same boat. So, you know, it is universal. I think people get it. And in a weird way, like, I've talked to Damien about this a million times. Like, the film strangely became like a little more relevant just because of the subject matter, because it is talking about
facts.
You know, grief, and depression. Strangely, the character kind of is in isolation, like really just not wanting to see anyone. So, I mean, it's his chosen isolation, but because the whole world basically didn't get to pick, I mean, they're in the same boat. And it was weird. It just kind of, there were a lot of parallels, and it's, you know, not a pandemic movie or anything, but you know, it was made before we even had a clue this would happen. But yeah, it definitely threw some wrenches into the process.
And our overall goal as well was like just to connect with the people, man. Just, you know, like build a relationship with our audience instead of kind of just saying, hey, we got a movie or a movie out, boom, bam. It definitely helped us adjust as far as the overall connection with the audience, so that it's enhanced and people know who we are, not only as, you know, the director or the actor, but as people as well. And I think that's what made people gravitate more towards this as well.
Yeah, it felt like a very like real film. Like, there's some films you watch it as like just a movie, but then there's the ones that actually do connect. That's how I felt, especially with you saying it kind of has this weird relevance now with the pandemic. Yeah. How that's how I was watching it. I was like, this feels very like current, even though you guys filmed it way before the world knew what was going to happen.
Right.
Yeah. Because I know a lot of people, and like a lot of filmmakers or artists who, like, this whole year they've been struggling with, like, even myself, like writing something. And it's just like being trapped inside your house. Like, it's nice at first, but then after a while, it's like too much.
Right.
That's what I liked. It was like a good blend of that real world issues with the surrealist of the panda being there, and like kind of like the figure there the whole time. It kind of reminded me, I don't know if you've seen the film Brigsby Bear. That's sort of like the like not the subject matter of Brigsby Bear, but that's what it sort of reminded me of, like the same tone.
Because
that film's all about like going out and making something and just being happy with something you're doing.
Right, definitely.
It was weird, man. I mean, it's like the type of thing where the panda, that's what people say, they're like, it felt like such a serious and like real film, but then you just like also forget that there's just a, you know, like almost 6 foot panda walking around in a mascot costume that's like ridiculous looking. And I mean, we bought that for next to nothing, so it's falling apart. And I mean, you know, it kind of adds a weird element to it. Like, I know why you're laughing, Damien, because the panda bear literally fell apart on day one.
Oh, man.
Pulled it out of the bag, it came in, and it just immediately started breaking apart. And then we started like taping it with duct tape and gaff tape, and like it was just a trip. And so I mean that panda is such an element of this very like serious movie. Mm-hmm. And I mean it's all just a weird mix. Like I think that's the same thing that happened with this year. It's mm-hmm. been a weird mix. Like there mm-hmm. has been, you know, some solace in finally being able to disconnect from the craziness that the world was, but then it's almost like you said, it's too much at the end of this. So it's like, where does the middle lie?
Exactly.
I don't think the solution is just like everything we did before, but you know, it is interesting. And I felt like this film, while it doesn't talk about that, it challenges you to think of a new reality for yourself, whether mm-hmm. you're the character of Camus or just a viewer.
Right.
I was going to ask how, Damien, when you read the script, like, and it was kind of like, I was reading that it's sort of fictionally based on Camus Leonardo. How did you approach it? Like sort of playing yourself, but not playing yourself?
Reading the script, at first I was a little intimidated just because of, A, this was like my very first time acting.
Mm-hmm.
And then B, I wanted to make sure that when I do act, I can do it from a general perspective and not too much of my actual story. Mm-hmm. So I had to separate the two. Although I am playing myself, it was kind of challenging because, you know, in real life, I lost my mother. So within the character, I had to take myself back in that time period of how I felt as far as just giving up. And you know what I'm saying? I feel like all of us can, like, we can all relate to that point. And it was, I don't know how to explain it, man. Like, it was a learning experience for sure, because I would even notice at times after we would film, I had to like shake it off because I was so dedicated to bringing myself back into that time period. I was just like, oh man, like cut, like I'm good. I don't have to be that character anymore, man. But I just wanted to bring my A game, man. Cause like, you know, for Evan to even believe in me and to trust in me with them bringing this vision to life, man, I had to bring it.
And you brought it. I mean, dude.
Oh like, yeah.
Thanks, I mean, I'm man. Biased. I know I'm like the director, but like, I want to hype you up, but like, yeah, dude. I mean, for you said you never acted and you hadn't. I mean, there are people who've told me that this performance just blew them away. And I mean, that's you. Wow. That's all you. And like, it was because I think you did blend some of your own experience, but you also knew when to leave it on set.
Exactly. Exactly.
And that's not something that's easy to do.
Yeah. I was even thinking about like Heath Ledger. You know what I mean? Rest in peace. Like, just the dedication to the Joker character. Because for us, it's just like a moment. You know, when we go to the movies and we watch it, but imagine his mentality, what he was going through and the dark places that he had visited within himself to even bring that character to life, you know? And then as far as, you know, him passing, it's crazy. But the fact that he created something that will be here forever, even though physically he's not, is amazing still. But that dedication is real.
I think I was reading stuff about Heath Ledger because a lot of like he obviously had to go to those dark places for the role. But I was also reading when they would cut, like he knew when to leave it like on the set, because I heard like at one point they cut and he was going off to the side doing like skateboard tricks.
Oh, OK. And, yeah. Perfect.
But like he obviously it still had some toll on him. Like,
yeah,
he can visually look like something to everybody else. But like we don't know what was happening on the inside.
Right. Very true.
I wouldn't have known that was actually your first performance. I had to, it was after the film when I was reading about it that I didn't know that was your first performance. I thought you had been acting for a while, honestly.
Damn. That's a compliment. I appreciate that, man.
I was like, I was very impressed by it. And the fact that it was your first performance is very good.
Thank you. But I think it was also another role that played into bringing that out was just the overall cast. I think we all just created a safe space for one another, because technically in the movie, I was the least experienced.
Mm-hmm.
So for everyone to kind of, for all of us actually, to put our egos to the door and just support one another and bring the best out of one another and know when to fall back and know when to, you know, step up. I think it was just a beautiful space, man. And everyone was just able to bring their A game, and it was very relaxed. So definitely.
How was the, how was like set life and like being there day to day? Like, I think I was looking on IMDb and the crew is pretty small from what I was seeing. I don't know how accurate the IMDb page is, because I don't know who's editing
it. It's pretty accurate.
It's pretty accurate. Yeah.
But yeah, how was the day-to-day shooting on set?
I mean, like you said, the crew was very small. You know, it's funny because this is my second narrative feature film. My first Son of Clowns, I think the crew was like 3 or 4 times the size. And, you know, I had a cinematographer on that. And just because of the time period of which I wanted to film this, and I actually like just made a YouTube video on my YouTube channel about this. I like break down a lot of the like behind the scenes of the film and stuff just for like DVD bonus features nobody asked for. But like, I wanted to shoot Panda in the fall, and like there were no cinematographers that were, you know, willing to work at this like, you know, indie level that were available. And like, there were people who were like, yeah, I could do it in the spring. And obviously I'm glad we didn't do it in the spring, because spring 2020, that would have been
happened.
Right. Yeah. And so like, it was this weird thing where I was like, well, you know, I shoot a lot of music videos. I do corporate stuff. You know, I've done some narrative cinematography, but I really don't love doing it when I'm directing. Mm-hmm. So I ended up doing the cinematography myself. And that was a challenge, but you know, it's funny. Like, I was so stressed out about it. And once I got on set, and like Camus was saying, the chemistry with everyone, like everyone knew what we were there to do. Mm-hmm. So they were understanding, like, you know, if the camera jammed, I had to go home and get another hard drive. They're like, it's cool. We're
gonna batteries.
Yeah. Batteries. You know, like when you're doing all that stuff and directing, like, it's just a lot to do at once.
Yeah.
And it's possible, you know, I planned it out as best I could. The pre-production, that probably saved me tons of headaches. I also leaned on the crew that we had, like the actors, even when they finished their part. Mm-hmm. Like, there was one day that Panda ended up doing the boom mic. And that was because the boom operator we had wasn't able to come that day. And that was cool. And so we just had to kind of make do. And, you know, you could let that ruin your day, or you could roll with it. And we just chose to roll with it. Like, we all wanted to be like water as much as we could, and just let the experience of being on set, you know, obviously we planned things out, we wrote the script, we did our homework, but like, once you're there, what's going to happen is going to happen. And despite it being a small crew, like, we had a ton of heart, which, I mean, is cheesy, but like, I really don't think a lot of other crews with less heart probably could have adapted and rolled with the punches of like having a 2-3 person crew.
No, for real.
Yeah. No, you need, I was talking on one of my episodes that you need a crew that's in it with the director. Cause I mentioned how I was working on sets during college, and there was 4 directors on set, cause it was like a weekend project where a director would shoot a day. So when one director is working, the other like 2 or 3 directors would be focusing on their film like the next day or 2 days from then, trying to figure everything out. So it's like, all right, they're focused on that, so you're down maybe like 2 people, and you have to kind of adapt to what's going to happen. But then I've been on sets, like one of my films that has been getting like a lot of buzz in the last couple weeks was a 4-person crew, and we did it within like 2 days.
Less is
I love
more.
That though, I love that, like, you know, obviously if you can have 40 people, go for it, but you know, I'm weird, like I actually kind of enjoy the more intimate experience of having a smaller crew. I'm a natural introvert. That's just my setting. So like, for me, you know, I can speak in front of a crowd. Like, I've directed a 50 person scene in Son of Clowns with a billion extras, and I can do that if I need to, but I prefer keeping it low key with people who just get why you're there. There's no egos. There's no, you know, anything. Mm-hmm. It's all for in service to the story.
Exactly.
I saw your film because I went to your website right before we were recording, and I saw Son of Clowns, and I immediately had a flashback because I worked on a film called Send in the Clowns.
Oh,
like in college.
Yeah.
and I worked on it for 1 day, and it was probably the weirdest, one of the weirdest set experiences I've seen.
Clowns are weird, man.
This one was like super secretive. I don't want to get too much into it, but like the guy would not show anybody the script, and we're all like, what's happening?
Yeah.
that's like what immediately I thought of, and I was like, is this a sequel? What is this?
Yeah, me and that guy, we were talking.
You just know.
Look, y'all been on it. Y'all already got the same mic. I mean, the trend is here.
It's just everybody's connected.
Everyone's
got that connections. I was going to ask, after you mentioned the actors, where did you, like, were they all like friends, or did you have to like hire people? Like, how did the act, like, how did the casting process go for this film?
Yeah. So obviously I told you how Camus and I met. So Camus was obviously the first person cast. And from there, once I knew that he was down to make the film, I obviously started filling out the other roles. And a lot of them actually did come from people, probably about half had been people I'd worked with before, through either music videos, a couple artists in the area, plus, you know, Eric Hartley, who plays the farmer in the film. He was a main character in my last film, Son of Clowns.
Love Eric.
You know, Eric's a great guy. And, you know, so some of that was, you know, obviously connections and people I work with here in North Carolina in the indie film scene. But then a lot of folks too, just, you know, I threw a casting call on the internet. You know, I said, if you're down to just like eat pizza and do some like long days and make indie film here, let's do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that obviously limits you a little bit, you know, cause not everyone can work for free, and I get that. Mm-hmm. But you know, the folks who did turn out, man, like, they were awesome. They, like I said, they brought it. They had great chemistry, and they were fun too. Like, we had a fun group of people. Like, we did the, it's like weird. Like, it's like Camus was saying, we would do these serious scenes, right? And then we would say cut, and then there'd be inside jokes flying left and right.
Just laughing,
you know, laughing. Yeah. And like, we were able to find that balance where like, we didn't let the tone of what was a kind of serious movie like bring down the vibe on set. Like, you know, we kept it professional and serious during the scenes that needed it.
Mm-hmm.
But like, there, I think it's like you said, that chemistry was definitely real. So mm-hmm.
That's how my buddy Ian, I worked on one of his sets, and it was like a pretty serious like short film. And he let us know like it's going to be serious subject matter. And I was the assistant director on it. So like, my job, I was like, well, if it's serious, I don't want everybody feeling that way the whole day. Like, we got to still like crack jokes.
Right.
Right.
And I was like, I get that your project's serious.
And you don't want to drain all the energy out of it. Yeah.
Exactly. That one was an interesting shoot. We tried doing a,
Hey Tim.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have a question for you, man.
Yeah. What's up?
So what is your like breakdown before you make a movie? Like what's your creative process?
So when I go into a movie, I typically want to write the script for it. I usually don't like getting someone else's script and like working around it, because if I write the script, I know what's in my head. I know what to like talk about, what everything's gonna be. Then I'll try to get the character arcs like down before I write anything. Yeah. I'll do a whole first draft. I usually will put in like music to kind of set the mood. Like, I just wrote a horror script. Nice. And I had like the Halloween soundtrack, the Witch soundtrack just playing. And that would get me in the mood for like what I'm writing. Then when I go to like break down the whole thing, I'll get like photos of each character. I'll be like, this is how like ideally they should start versus how ideally how they should sort of end up. And like, the photos should show like the emotion.
Yeah.
I'll put in like songs or artwork that kind of describe like the scene or atmosphere of the film.
For sure.
That's usually how I go about it. I know one of the films that I'm currently writing with Ian and his girlfriend Haley, mm-hmm. we pretty much wrote the whole script breakdown before we wrote the script. So we know the whole story.
Yeah,
that's key.
And we have a whole PowerPoint. It's like a 70-slide PowerPoint. Nice. For the whole film. And it's all ready to go.
I love to hear that, man. Like, that's what's so funny is it took me, and really until Panda, like, I mean, there's nothing wrong with freeform, but like, I love doing a good outline now. I mean, it doesn't take that long to do. Like, people mm-hmm. get scared of that kind of pre-production, mm-hmm. but you catch so many of the dumb things in that bit, and then they never make it to the script. Now, of course, new dumb things always find their way, but you know, like you can catch a bad idea early mm-hmm. before someone else does, you know, and it doesn't make it perfect, but I've found it really helps. I've done that with like three new scripts I'm writing right now, and it's been super helpful.
Something else mm-hmm. I do also is I try to get like a director's statement or a log line, and that's what I work the whole script around. And I if I'm writing the script and it doesn't fit into my statement, I have to rework it.
Dude, I actually love that. You know what's funny? I've never wrote a log line until after I've edited a film.
Really?
Yeah, I just like kind of know what it's about and I tell people, but I don't ever have that like clear, you know, two sentence bam until after. So that's, I need to do that. That's,
I've been trying idea. To do it because it's a good way for me to be like, okay, this is what the story is. Now I have to like fill in the whole story. But if I know like
intention,
yeah, that's what I like. I always will do that before I start a script, or like even when I'm driving, I'm just constantly thinking about scenes, or scenes will play out of my head. And then I have to translate that to the page, which sometimes is the hardest part.
Right.
But that's usually that's usually my process. Cause honestly, I haven't directed in a while. The last thing I did was my college final film back in 2018. I was going to try to direct something at the beginning, like 2020, but then the whole pandemic started.
Yeah.
Cause me and my buddy Arsenio were going to shoot something that I would write, because we were doing this thing where we would write a script and try to shoot it in a day, and I acted in his film.
Shit.
I felt like you, Damien, when I, because he asked me to act in it, and I'm like, you know, I'm not an actor, right?
Yeah.
I was like, I'll work with what you give me, but I'll try.
Yeah. Nah, for sure.
I think everyone should act. I think everyone should.
I was just about to say that.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Even if you fail miserably, it's so much to learn.
You learn.
So much to learn.
I've noticed so much from watching, like, when I'm acting, I'll notice little things I do, like little like body ticks or like movements that I wouldn't have noticed if I didn't rewatch it.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting experience. They, at my college, they try to do an acting directing class where it's all directors directing other directors how to act, but it's trying to teach you how to talk to actors.
Yeah.
Which I feel
it's crucial. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I feel like it would have helped better if we were actually working with actors in the class instead of it just being directors. But I get I get the exercise.
Well, I think the intention is like weirdly that anyone can act. Now, I'm not saying like everyone's a great actor and should be acting, like I think everyone has the potential to tell a story. Now, you know, what separates a good actor and a bad actor is like, you know, like an Oscar winning actor, whoever, they can tell many stories of people who are not them. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes them good. But I do think like if you found, you know, Joe Schmo off the street, like he may only be able to tell like 1.5 stories, and you have to like really know his personality type and know the way he is, his mannerisms. And like that takes time. But you could, I think, write an incredible story for Joe Schmo. But like, you know, how do you know what that story is? And I think that's the key with figuring out who can act. And that's why I say everyone should act, because when you have to go into your own brain, your own self, and do that, it allows you to understand, it allows you to direct better. Cause you know, I've done, you know, some short stuff. I've done more theater, honestly, than actual film acting. And the theater acting is another level, cause you have to, you know, go for an hour and you have to remember everything, no cuts. And that's even more intense, you know?
Yeah.
But I think it's just that training that helps you communicate better when you understand how it feels to be in the shoes.
Hmm. Oh, yeah. Speaking of acting, Panda Bear was Evan's first time ever acting in his own film.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there was a small cameo. There is, you know, what's funny? I had this even smaller cameo, but I didn't really even speak in Son of Clowns. It was so small, you would like blink and miss it. But this one, I actually spoke. Like heard the dialogue. So yeah, that was like my first official, and it was actually longer, and I cut it way down because I couldn't stomach myself for that long on the screen. I didn't want to take it into a Tarantino where I like
make a whole scene. Oh, shit. A whole monologue.
Right.
Yeah. That's something I try to do with my films that I write, is I try to at least put myself in at least one scene if it's like one line or something.
It's always fun to do that.
I unintentionally put myself in one of my films just because I didn't have a third actor, or like my third actor bailed and it was just two lines, and I was like, fuck it, I'll fill in. Like it's two lines, I can do this.
Right.
And it was a scene where I could easily like walk in, walk out, and the monitor was over where I was exiting, so I could still keep an eye on the scene.
Yeah.
But it's acting's very interesting with
it is
how to approach it.
It is. It is. I think something that everyone can do, but very few people can do very well, and it takes a lot of training. And like I said, you can tap into that story that's personal, that allows you to tell it. But I think, you know, it takes time, and you have to plan it out. You have to communicate with your director. You have to be vulnerable. I mean, that's the key. Acting is just vulnerability.
Because you could, because you can delve into something personal, but maybe like you do that for a take, the next take the director will be like, oh, let's try it this way instead, like do it something some other way. Like try new things. Like for me, when I was acting, like I try to at least memorize the lines and the blocking, but when I'm also working with like another director, I have to listen to what they have to say as well.
It's good to be not the director sometimes too.
Right.
It's important. you got to humble yourself, you know. It's important to like hold a boom pole to just listen and just see how other people communicate. Like, cuz then you realize, oh, the way I'm doing it is not the way, you know.
That's what I've noticed is a lot of the times I'll learn a lot from directors when I'm not directing and I'm doing like the boom, like boom or sound. I'll just be watching how the director handles the set and how the flow of the day is going.
Right.
Yeah, there was a lot of, I've been on a lot of good sets and a lot of like very like get me off the set.
Yeah. Oh, me too, man. Like you got to do both, right? Because I think that's how
you honestly learn. You honestly learn more from the ones you want to get off of.
Facts.
I could not agree more, man. Like when I got out of film school, I was, you know, crewing on all kinds of stuff, and I did like reality shows for a while, right? So I was like production assistant. And I did a couple reality shows, and obviously, you know, the trashy TV is trashy TV. It's all fake. You know,
I'm in one of them.
Takes. Yeah. What are you on? Wait, that's interesting.
I was an extra on Dr. Pimple Popper. Like,
it was
$2.50 for 6 hours just to sit in a waiting room, and I could be on my phone the whole time.
Nothing wrong with that.
I honestly fell asleep and I forgot they were filming a show. So I woke up and I saw camera crews walk in and I was like, what's happening?
That's amazing. That's a dream pick right there. Just
no dead ass.
It was easy $2.50.
I'll say it's an easy $2.50.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I actually watched Dr. Popo Pimper or Pimple Popper. I was going to say Popo Pimper.
Popo Pimper.
You got to rewind and look for Tim now.
I don't know what episode it is, but I was trying to find it too. Because I'm pretty sure I'm in some of the shots, but I just don't remember what episode it was.
Yeah.
And I'm about to look. I went through some of the...
Not right now.
We'll find it and then post it like when one of us finds it.
You got to make a GIF out of it.
I'm probably like sleeping in the background. I hope they caught me and like waking up and forgetting where I was.
Yeah.
I did that.
Got to look back down at the phone and stuff.
I also did that at the AMAs. I was in the at the AMAs. Somebody was performing, and I'm in the shot looking at them, and I have no idea who they are. But I'm like front row looking at them. I'm in like five shots.
Tim is a walking meme. We have to find these.
Your moment could be coming with the memes, man.
I have so many memes from college that need to be like viral.
Yo, we have to find these. Anybody watching, please look for Dr. Pop. Why am I saying Popo Pimper? Pimple Popper. And what'd you say, the AMAs?
The AMAs from 2018?
I
think it was the year, I forgot like who won. I think Taylor Swift won, but she wins every year. I don't know.
I probably would have had the same reaction too.
I think it's 2018.
I feel it.
I like forgot who all was there. It was Taylor Swift was there and Post Malone were there. And 21 what Pilots? I have no idea. I have no idea who was there.
There you go.
Wow. That's but random.
That was legit all when I moved out to LA, like the first like 6 months I was there.
Because
It was for my last semester of college.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you go to film school, Evan?
I went to East Carolina University in Greenville, North Carolina.
Okay.
Yeah. Nice. So it's, you know, small town film school. It's fun. You know, I really think it's funny. Like, I have so much of my filmmaking sensibilities from, I think, that time. And obviously, like, my time as a kid, just, you know, running around with a camera, filming dumb stuff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just like, it's a very, like, carefree, I would almost say, like, the little bit I've gathered about what Austin was like in the 90s, just like people just doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And I would just show up with the camera. You know, there's so many videos. I feel like I could make a series out of just like random stuff I filmed over the years there. But, you know, I think it was just that kind of attitude of like, well, if you want to make something, you show up with your camera and whoever is willing to come with you. And that's how it gets made. Otherwise, it doesn't, you know? Yeah. And, you know, I love LA, you know, I've been to film festivals there. The infrastructure is super dope. You know, obviously if they ever offer me a Star Wars, just tell me what time I show up. I'll be there. I'll direct Baby Yoda. I mean, they've got 5,000 shows coming out now. So, I mean, give me like,
you could probably land something.
Right. I mean, give me just the lowest tier Star Wars show. I'll jump in. Like, I will make it amazing. Disney, you're listening, you know? So
they might be, you know, that's,
yeah, Disney listens, you know.
I think they might. I've kind of bashed them in the past, but I also,
well, that's okay. They're a glutton for punishment.
Oh, though. They're definitely tuning in if that's the case.
They'll make, you know, Last Jedi, and then they'll make a whatever the last one was. I can't remember.
I have a theory about Disney, like a little theory about it. So I put out like an episode where me and my buddy Arsenio were debating the new Lion King because he likes it, but I didn't like it, and we were kind of
CGI one.
Yeah, the CGI one. We were kind of debating like why he liked it and why I didn't.
Yeah.
And for a while, it was my lowest rated episode. It was also my Instagram post had like the least amount of likes out of anything. So I feel like Disney filtered it and like blocked it from being viewed.
They have powers, man. They've
That's my conspiracy theory about it.
Do you think Walt Disney is Frozen?
Yeah. That's my life's mission is to find him.
And melt him?
I think he's chilling in Antarctica. I think he's just there.
I remember I went to Disney World one year, and that was my whole like mission. I would like ask anybody where he was.
How old were you?
Oh, I was like 20.
Oh yeah, I was about to say, I thought you were a kid, bro. I was about to be like, wow, like
I'm 8 years old.
You was a very focused kid, bro. Like
my family going to Disney, like we're having a fun trip. Me, little 8 year old, like, where's Walt?
Oh, where's Walt?
On some Stewie shit, bro. Just like
I'm all
right.
I have my like my low monotone voice right now. I'm just like, where's Walt?
Right.
As an 8 year old boy.
Seriously.
I really wonder if he is Frozen, because I feel like that's the type of crazy thing that someone said because maybe it happened and they were like, can you believe that we had to do this on a Thursday? I was gonna clock out early, but then we had to freeze Walt, you know?
Freeze Walt.
Like, right.
It's like that weird type of thing. And I feel like maybe some guy just made it up. Who knows?
What if it was like somebody said it as a joke? Like around the time, and then it was like one of those workplace rumors that just kept growing.
Yeah,
I mean, usually the truth is usually in front of us, and sometimes we don't even believe that. So
that is true.
It could be so much right now, man. Like, but I wonder if it's like a setup for him to where it's almost as if like it's a sculpture and it's like ice, or if he's just in a cooler, just like.
I imagine him like Mr. Freeze from the Batman series with like the glass thing around his head.
Oh, the 90s one.
Yeah. Or he's just like Arnold Blue, like in the suit.
That's the one right there. Yeah.
And he's conducting like Eskimos in that movie, right? In Batman and Robin to like sing.
Yep. In unison.
That's Walt right there.
That is Walt.
Since we've established in the canon that Disney is listening, Disney, can you give us like a Panda Barrett miniseries? You know, Panda's a cute and cuddly character. I think Panda could be a great addition to the lineup. We'll let Panda come in, maybe Disney Plus series 2022.
So. Yeah, Panda is tired of being around humans.
Yeah, Panda. Panda's spinoff could be wild.
Panda wants to like set up Noah's Ark. You know what I'm saying? Panda wants to go around with other animals.
It could be crazy. Panda could be like a wizard bounce. I'm gonna stop.
Yeah,
I can't give it all away.
Make a PowerPoint.
Right.
Yeah. Let's go pitch it to Walt.
You gotta leave Disney something to think about. You know.
Well, with Walt, he's just thinking about remakes right now.
They're like, Walt,
let's come up with a new idea, and he's like Mulan, and they're like, we did Mulan already, and he's like, no, we didn't.
All right, not the way
I'm envisioning.
Right.
They're not gonna sing
another one.
They just
keep going.
Lion King 1.5,
which was a movie.
That was a movie.
Do you know that? I'm sure you. That was a joke. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
It was Timon and Pumbaa, wasn't it?
Evan spelling the joke. It was like straight to DVD or VHS at that point.
It was like they're like, let's make the Lion King
Blu-ray
from Timon and Pumbaa's perspective.
Right, and call it 1.5.
Panda Barrett 1.5 confirmed next year.
Have the whole movie from Panda's like point of view, like even when he's not there.
Yeah, What was Panda
that shit
would
doing? Be hilarious.
Actually, you know what's funny? You mentioned that, Camus. You probably don't remember this. This was at like 2 a.m. at Eric's when we were all tired and about to leave. I was like, wouldn't it be funny if Panda was talking to this like giraffe head, which was funny enough. There's a giraffe in Son of Clowns that was like a from a local artist in Wilmington. It was like a, you know, sculpture, paper mache thing, but it's like the size of, I don't know, a door. So it's huge. And Eric Hartley, the guy who plays Farmer and Panda, who was also dad and Son of Clowns, and you know, we filmed at his actual house in Panda Barrett. So he had the giraffe still. And I was like, oh, I haven't seen that thing in like, gosh, 4 years since Son of Clowns. And he was like, oh, I'll show it to you. And then of course Panda was there in the thing, and I was like, they should just talk. I'll throw it in as like a weird flashback. I don't know what I was thinking. It was like 2 a.m.
We wasn't it supposed to be like a therapy session?
The moment I woke up the next day and looked at that footage, I was like, why did I, you know, spur the dumb decision. Like my third can of Red Bull, right? I mean,
it,
you know,
just put it as a re-edit Panda Barrett as like a post-credit scene. Like
right,
teasing the series.
That's actually great promo material. Universe.
Yep,
you could. That could be a promo.
Yeah, everything has to be a verse, or it doesn't exist.
That's right. Like when you mentioned that you wanted to screen the film and have like a concert. That's what the film felt like to me. Was it was like leading up to? It was like a whole intro to, like a concert or something.
Mm-hmm.
I could see it, man. That'll I mean, be fire. You've got the music and the credits, and Camus runs out through the curtain, continuing the song, but live lyrics. And then it's like WrestleMania, and then Panda comes flying out. No, I'm just kidding.
And then the giraffe comes in.
Yeah, the giraffe. Man, we have taken this off the wheels. I love it.
Honestly, that's what the show is. That's what happens.
It's amazing.
Oh, Disney, man. Don't take any of our shit for real.
Yeah, Disney, you can't have it. I'm sorry.
They can't have it.
If you tell them they won't buy it, then they'll offer you millions of dollars. So
that is true.
Don't buy it, Disney.
I don't know, but Disney also does some shady things, like that Star Wars fan film that came out a while ago.
Oh, they shut all those down. Yeah.
Yeah. Because the guy,
like, what does it hurt? What does it hurt?
Because he said he wasn't making money off of it. He was like literally a fan film. And then they started monetizing it for them.
Oh yeah.
So that was like a whole, I remember like having like a bad taste in my mouth after that, but it was I was going to ask, cause when you mentioned your film school in North Carolina, I was going to ask about it. Cause the one I went to was in Chicago and it was Columbia College. So it was downtown Chicago. So like our environment was literally the city. That was our campus, was the whole South Loop of Chicago. I was going to ask, how was like your surrounding area like impacted in like either the films you made or just like the environment, campus in general?
I love that you ask that, because I think environment, like physical setting, is so crucial to films, whether they're student films or just normal films. So Greenville's interesting because Greenville is, you know, definitely a college town. It's kind of a smaller town. It's, you know, in Eastern North Carolina. So it's kind of away from all the cities. So it's not like super country, but you go out 5 miles, you're in farms. I mean, you know, it's, you get that if you want it. So you have access to that, but then you also have just like college kids who are just down to do whatever, partying. I mean, you know, you ask someone to do a crazy thing, they're like, yeah, let's do it. Give me beer. You know, that kind of vibe is definitely there. But also it's got like a really good art school. Like people don't think about this. There's some like good artists like making sculptures at like 4 a.m. I would go through the art building and like the freaking sculptors are there just hammering at 4 a.m, listen to like metal. I'm like, dang, y'all are just like living that life. Like, you know, it's wild. It's just kind of the wild west of everything. And that's kind of what I loved about it, is because there was never like one personality type who was there. It was literally just a bunch of people doing crazy stuff.
I was gonna, like, because with Chicago, with our films, it was every student film was either like shot in a like student apartment or like somewhere in the city.
Yeah, dorm films.
I was like, literally,
those. Yeah,
literally every film had like the college dorm in it.
Yep.
Damn.
That's cool that you had like, that's similar to with the artists making sculptures. There's a room in my freshman year building called the graffiti room. And it was like an entire floor where you could go down 24/7 and just draw on the walls and the floors and paint. Dope. And then at the beginning of every year, they just repainted it white so they could start over.
Yeah. That's dope.
It was a cool room. It was, that one was a interesting yeah. dorm.
Yeah, it's I don't know, man. Film school is just a weird thing. Like I actually just shot a video literally the other day about for my channel. I haven't edited it yet, but it's like, should you go to film school? Mm-hmm. And I think the long story short answer is like, maybe. Like, you know, I mean, I don't think it's necessary, but at the same time, it helped me a lot. Mm-hmm. But if you're gonna, I mean, there's just some things that aren't worth going into a ton of debt for. And if you can look it up on YouTube, I mean, that's like the biggest thing for me, why I make these like YouTube videos on my channel that are like very behind the scenes, is because I was told for so many years that making films in North Carolina was A, not possible, and B, stupid, because it was a waste of time. Mm-hmm. And you couldn't do it unless you moved to New York or LA. Mm-hmm. And like, while I think there are definitely elements of that that are true, like it's really hard. It's not going to be glamorous. You know, you have to do like literally everything yourself. Mm-hmm. But if you do want to do that and have a certain vibe or aesthetic to your films, you can do things here that you can't do in LA. Like, cause I mean, I can't shoot indie in LA cause you need permits out the, you know, every street, unless like you're in your own house. I think mm-hmm. you literally have to have like a government permit yeah. because of the way the, you know,
or go outside is. Of like LA County, something.
Yeah.
Like.
You have to like drive out, you know, somewhere far, which, you know, that's possible, mm-hmm. but you know, it just depends on what you want to do. Right. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think for me, it just depends. And I just like wanted to show people that like, there's not a right or a wrong way. Cause I'm not saying LA is bad. It's right. a cool town. You know, I'm just saying wherever you are, some people can't move to LA. Mm-hmm. So like, why not start and, you know, meet people where you're at and like, let them come to you too. Like, I think that's a big thing. Like, I hate seeing my city and just cities losing talent because they think they have to be somewhere else to do something. And I think that's the one good thing the pandemic did, is it kind of told everyone, like, you got to do stuff where you are. There's no other choice.
Yeah.
You
know?
That was a kind of a big reason. Like, I'm not in LA anymore. I was living there for 2 years. I moved back to Indiana.
Yeah.
And I'm actually nice. Moving to a new apartment in a couple weeks. Nice. So I'm looking forward to like that start as well. But
yeah,
I've been talking with like Nick, and we could have a whole discussion about whether you should go to film school or not. Cause I'm very similar with you. Like, part of it I agree is good. Part of it I agree is not good and a waste of money.
Mm.
And even one of my professors, my like third year, was like, you don't need to go to film school. Like, you should just drop out. It's a waste of money. But like, this is my third year in, so I'm already 3 years in debt.
Yeah.
But we could have a whole.
It's. Yeah. I mean, I could really talk about this for ages. You know, I won't bore everyone, but I think like TLDR, like I think it's worth it if you will do what you're going to do in the school plus more. And like, right. I think what I mean by plus more is like, if you're just going to go to film school, do the bare minimum and be like, yo, I know how to use a tripod and I can frame a shot. You could learn that on YouTube. You're just going there to party and like be in that college right. bubble. And like, the college bubble is fun, but like, it's not worth paying that much money for. Like,
there's a difference yeah. between college and film school.
Exactly. Yeah. So you have to ask yourself, like, which one are you going for? Because I think you can supplement it with your own projects and really further it and use that 4 year, 2 year, whatever it is, and like really hone your craft and kind of, you know, really push yourself. Because I mean, when you're in that zone, that's a unique time. And
that is.
I mean, you know, I work full time. I do other things. Like, you know, it's hard to make films when you're an adult and you have other things to do. So like, if you're younger, like there is a benefit to that. But you know, again, some things just aren't worth going into a ton of debt for. So it may sound like I'm doing a bunch of non-answers, but like, you know, I think you just have to assess your situation. Like,
yeah, know what you want out of it if you do it. Mm-hmm. Don't just do it to think like, oh, I'm going in there and I'm going to be this or that. Like, get exactly what it is that you need. Have a game plan and then utilize your resources while you're in there.
Yeah, because like, that was my biggest thing, is like, for the longest time while I was in film school, my plan was like, all right, when I graduate, you know, after a few months, I'm going to move to LA. And I like never did that because I ended up like needing obviously more and more money. And then, you know, you had to pay bills. And I was like, all right, once I get to this, I'm just going to call it.
Yeah.
And it just never happened. Cause then I was like, well, now I want to write this film here. And so I just kept like doing things. And I think what I realized was like, I want to see if I can do it here on the way I want to do it. And it turned out you can, it's just really hard.
Yeah.
But it is possible, you know, if you want to write your films in North Carolina, in Indiana, wherever you are, you know, it is doable.
I have like a whole project I'm working on where it's like literally everything I'm writing is not in LA. It's like this project I want to do is kind of like an anthology sort of thing, but around different parts of the country. It's like four or five shorts combined as one film, but like different parts and different regions.
Oh, I like that.
That's fire.
That's going to be a daunting project.
Sure.
It'll be worth it. And the way I was doing it was like, I'll look at each one as a short film, shoot that. Mm-hmm. And then once they're all done, piece it together.
Put it together. Yeah. One film at a time.
Honestly, that's like how I have to like write it and approach it. Cause I had all the ideas came to me. And I'm like, all right, let me organize these and just work on one at a time.
Yeah, because if you focus on trying to correlate everything, that's when shit goes left, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I wanted to switch it up since this is a film podcast, but I want to talk to you, Damien, since I'm pretty sure you're the first musician I've had on this podcast.
Tight.
I wanted to talk to you about like your influences with music as well as how it came to be in film, or like even what was your background with like film growing up, if like you want, like if you wanted to be in films at any point in your life too.
I mean acting was always cool for me, but if I were to go parallel with the Panda Bear situation and then kind of growing up, I would have to go with like Will Smith and Fresh Prince. I liked how he played himself but a fictional character, because the whole storyline was literally him as Will Smith, but it was still fictional, you know. And just his charisma growing up and him kind of just being in any and every room was just appealing to me, especially as a black man. And I just thought that was just so dope to be able to see that it's feasible to be able to do that. But as I got older, that's when I started to understand like acting as a whole. Because growing up, man, my mother, she had the biggest crush on Denzel. So like, or Denzel Washington, if I should say his full name. But she's just like, that's all I kind of saw. And I was just like, all right, this is very one-sided. I'm not really going to learn anything. I'm going to just learn how to be Denzel.
How to be Denzel.
That's it, you know? But like I said, as I got older and just my peers, just kind of being open to different things, I love movies. I never was like, oh, I want to be an actor. I just appreciated movies. I appreciate movies that are like, I love mindfuck movies. I love just movies that provokes a feeling. And going to music, that's what I feel like is the correlation is between the two. I came up with this method to where it was like, with films it's motion pictures and music is emotion pictures, you know what I'm saying? So when it comes to music, I kind of like to write down words that you can see as I say it, so it's like you're there with me. It's almost like we're sitting down one-on-one having a conversation, or even if you're just kind of in your own mind and you close your eyes, you feel like you're there with me in a situation that I speak on. But like I said, man, I never was just like, yo, I want to be a actor. But I think as a musician, that kind of is acting, because Camus Leonardo is my artistry name. And although like it's still the same person, I'm not playing a fictional character. In actuality, I kind of am. In a sense, because as far as Camus Leonardo on the music side, he's like a very confident but also self-reflective kind of person. So it's like the balance of what you aspire to be as far as confidence, but also that vulnerability that we all strive, especially as men, you know what I mean? We live in a society to where toxic masculinity is real. So I just think Camus Leonardo, what I found out, the name Camus means dictionary in Indonesian, and that's not how I came up with the name. How I came up with the name was I was kicking it with a friend of mine, Jones Michael, and we used to play Super Smash Bros. When we would record in the studio, and the character I used was Samus. So I just literally took the S out of Samus and added a K, and his name was Key One at the time, and our group was called K Square. So it was just like, boom, okay, that's how Canvas came about. But then of course, as time increased, man, I just started noticing different things. Mm-hmm. And then Leonardo, I came up with that aspect from Leonardo da Vinci, his quote, simplicity is the ultimate sophistication. And I just find like I'm a very simple guy, man. I don't need too much to be satisfied. And I just I'm good, you know. And like it's kind of hard to say that because I don't want people to think I really don't care what people if people think I'm content. Mm-hmm. But like it's not that I'm too comfortable and I'm not stagnant. I'm just happy along the process. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? I'm not so stuck on the destination to where I'm just like, mm-hmm. like I lose sight. But Leonardo actually means a brave lion. So the name Camus Leonardo means a brave lion who defines itself. And I think it's just an example of really just coming on a journey with me to figure out life, you know, and just to kind of have those moments of reflecting and figuring this shit out, man. Like, but like I said, as far as the acting aspect, I think music helps me out a lot because in certain songs, I have to go back to moments, especially performing live. Mm-hmm. I have to enter myself into that mentality so I can bring that emotion to stage because the album that Evan was talking about, Dames, I have a song on there that's called Learn to Love. And I'm literally speaking on my mother. And the last verse is literally, I'm giving you a picture on the moment she passed. You know what I mean? Like literally mm-hmm. laying in bed, waking up, thinking it was a dream, going into her room and like just literally seeing her physical body. Mm-hmm. Knowing that she's gone. So I like imagine me on stage like monotone, like I mean people are gonna be like, I mean that's deep, but like mm-hmm. no. So I have to literally live the lyrics over and over again, especially performing live. So I think those skills kind of help with the movie mm-hmm. and overall acting. But I think it's a lot of similarities in between acting and making music, but after Panda Bear, man, my respect for actors and actresses and directors and just everyone's role in just overall movies is completely different now because I appreciate it more. You know, mm-hmm. I'm just like, oh wow, I know what that person is doing. I know what's happening there. I know da 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 da. And it's I just love learning new shit. Mm-hmm. So being able to have something new to master. It's fulfilling to me. So it's like, oh, wow, I could learn so much more about this. But yeah,
I would agree. Like when I was listening to all your music, because I would have it on at work since I worked those early morning nice. Shifts, I can listen to music. So I put on like all your albums yeah. and they all like painted pictures. I even because my girlfriend mm-hmm. loves French fries. I showed her your song Papa's Fritas and I was like, this is now your new theme song.
Yes. Yo, you want to know what's crazy? You want to know how that song came about?
How?
I'll give you like a very quick story. Okay. So like my friend Jones Michael, the one I was telling you about who I came up with the name Camus with when we played mm-hmm. Super Smash Bros. And stuff. We literally was recording and how his setup was like he had an attic in his room or we were in the attic overall, but you know, like the padded walls and then the window and the wood and stuff. Mm-hmm. That's part of attics and stuff. We will record, we had the recording booth in there and then the actual room was outside. So while I was in the recording booth, he kept the mic on and we were just messing around. And I was just like, dang, I'm hungry, yo. Like, I'm fucking hungry. And then I literally just sat there. I was like, Papas Fritas, bitch, I love French fries. Like, I just came up with it. And then he was like, yo, say that again. And I was just like, what? Are you serious? He's like, yo, say that again. Say that again, man. I got a beat for it. Say that again, man. Come on, man, real. Don't forget it, man. And I'm just like, bro, I'm hungry. Can we get some fucking French fries from Burger King down the street, bro? Like, I'm not about to do this. Like, what are you talking about? Lo and behold, as persuasive as he is, he was like, man, do it. So I did it. And then, like, I literally said the chorus. And then I freestyled a verse, said the chorus again. And then at the end of the song, I say, they ain't even ready. Talked about French fries, but now I want spaghetti. I said that at the end of the song because we literally did all that before I wanted French fries. And then his parents were downstairs. It was like, hey, y'all, if y'all hungry, we got some spaghetti downstairs. And I was like, well, shit, after all this talking about French fries, I want spaghetti now. So yeah, that's how that came about.
So you're setting up the food universe.
Deadass, I had to manifest for my tummy, bro.
You got to do it, man.
Got you to. Got
that's like what MF Doom has a whole album that's like food oriented.
Food. Food. Yeah, man. Yeah.
Could, like, easily.
Dude, you got to do the cheese balls song. Panda bear it, bro.
I think
you,
I think
ate so many of those things.
I think I'm still healing from that trauma.
You are, bro.
So Tim, when I tell you the cheese ball budget was impeccable on this movie, bro.
It was a lot.
You know those like giant tubs?
I was wondering like how many you were going through with like that and like chips.
A lot.
A lot.
I mean, I had a trunk full of them.
Yeah.
And by the end of the movie, I still had like two left over. So I like brought them in my house and I didn't really eat them on the set. Like the actors obviously did because that was like in the scenes. So like, I was like, you know, I actually haven't had one in a while. So I popped one open. I was like, this is going to be great. And I ate like three or four and I was like, these are awesome. And I ate three or four more and I was like, these are mediocre. And I ate three or four more and I was like, these are terrible. And then I had two jars left.
I did the same thing. I think like I saw them at Target and I was like, man, I haven't had cheese balls in forever. I like bought it, ate like three of them, and I went, this is why.
A lot of times there's a reason. Yeah, I was gonna say there's a reason you haven't had a food for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then your brain tricks you and it makes you think, oh, maybe it's nostalgia, maybe it is still good. And it's like,
no, my brain was like, fuck that. Anytime I would see cheese balls out in public, bro, like my
these
brain.
Are different. These are different than Cheetos. These are not Cheetos. These are like, all like they don't have as much flavor.
Like, there's like, well, there's also like no crunch air. To it. Yeah, yeah, it's air.
It's like packing peanuts. It's like what Amazon puts in your packaging.
It's cheese balls. Literally.
Yeah.
Like Chizair. That's what they need to call it. Chizar. Yep. But like air. Chizair.
With your music, I would definitely agree. Like, and a lot of music, you have to put on like that performance to paint that picture. I know a lot of the music I listen to, I love listening to it and envisioning like what they're talking about or the scenario. And like not just with like rap or any music.
Yeah, for
like,
sure.
I just love listening to what the story is, or even like how the music's conveyed.
Definitely.
That's a whole other beast too, is music. Because
it is, man.
It's so much. I feel like music can be more intricate than film at points.
Definitely.
I could see that. I could definitely see that.
Music is so weird because I actually think music is a large reason I got into film, because while I was always filming things, like especially in the era when I was in like middle school, high school, I would like ride the bus to school and, you know, it would go from the CD player to the little like rip-off MP3 player,
MP3, yeah.
Ford, you know, an iPod. And this was like 2007. And, you know, I'd be sitting on the bus and it'd be early in the morning. You know, I'd got my head against that cold window. Yeah. You feel every bump as you're riding by.
Oh, gosh.
You know what I'm talking about?
Don't let it be the two windows where it's like.
Yeah. Oh, and then there's that rattle. Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, that North Carolina public or that Wake County public school system bus. You know?
Gotta love it.
Yeah. And like what I would do is I was like, so, you know, and you're in that like brain space when you're like 14, 15, where your brain is still developing. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, I'm just looking out the window, thinking of music videos to every song I'm listening to. And then, you know, if I see a guy walking on the street to cross the bus or something, I'd be like, what is that guy's story? And I would like start thinking about what he would do to the music I was listening to. And like at the time I was like just shooting music videos in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember telling someone that and they're like, what are you talking about? And I was like, everyone doesn't do that. And so that's where I was like, oh, maybe I need to make music videos. And like, that's what turned to films. Isn't that weird? Like, but
I love the moments in a way. I love the moments of like synchronicity of like when people are walking or doing stuff and it's on beat to whatever you're listening to.
Yeah, I know what you're
like,
talking about.
That is the coolest shit ever, bro. Like, even when you're walking, like you feel like you're in tune with the music that's playing and just having it as like background music for this everyday shit that you're doing, it is the best feeling, man.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's what I do the same thing where I'll like look at someone, I'm listening to the music, and then I'm like, are they the main character of this story? Like, what's going on in their story?
Yeah.
That going back to your question, Damien, that's another process when I prep is if I'm listening to music,
so,
like a couple of scripts I've written scenes to a song because I'm like, I want this song in this scene, and this is like the flow of the scene. So I've done that before where it's like I have a song in mind that I want to use. And I think I heard Tarantino say like he writes scenes to songs that he likes to fit the song in. And that's why his soundtracks are so good.
You know what I would write a movie to for for an album? Radiohead's A.
Kid A.
Kid A, yeah, Kid A.
I could see that. Well, Johnny Greenwood's like, I think him and was it Tom York? They do film scores now.
Yep.
Are you serious?
Johnny Greenwood does all
that
of
that makes sense.
He does all of P.T. Anderson's movies, and Tom York did the score for the remake of Suspiria.
Wow.
And it's super good. It's super calm and like peaceful for such like a dark movie.
Yeah.
It's so good.
But that makes sense though.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much like what it was.
Even like Kid A and OK Computer, Ramin Djawadi for Westworld reinterpreted all of those songs. I had to do a whole a music for cinema class, and I used Westworld as my final to say like why his music works for the show. Well, so I had to do a whole analysis on like the first season of Westworld.
Damn. That's fire.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not even gonna lie, man, like being a black kid growing up, like all my friends were like, what the fuck are you listening to? Like, I was listening to Radiohead, Pink Floyd, 311, Sublime, Blink-182. And it's wild because, like, my very first hip-hop albums that I bought was Mad Villainy from Doom and Madlib and Late Registration from Kanye West. So, like, those were the very two physical copies that I bought. But, like, growing up, I was playing like different sports that normally black guys don't play. Such as, well, I'm not even gonna say that because I mean soccer is pretty dominant worldwide. But I started playing lacrosse in middle school, and it was crazy because like all my friends was like, "Why are you playing a white sport?" Da, 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 da. But the origin from lacrosse is like Native Americans, and I'm actually like Choctaw Cherokee, so I didn't even know that until, of course, later on in life when my dad was like, "Oh yeah, did you get your papers?" I was like, "What the fuck are you talking about?" He's like, "We're Choctaw Cherokee." Da, 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 da. But anyway, but like you know, I would get close to my friends that I made for the different sports I played and stuff, and they were like of all ethnicities. And just listening and adapting to their cultures, man, it was just so cool. And just listening to the stuff that they listened to, it was like, wow, I was open into like a whole new world. And I feel like that plays a lot of influence with just how I operate within music, because don't get me wrong, like as far as rapping, I love hip hop because that's what kind of helped raise me as a man today. But as far as just sounds as a whole, man, like that has helped me become and understand the artistry on a whole new level as far as what is it that I want, what emotions do I want to provoke when I create this music, how can I make my voice an instrument along with the song so that it's not just me just talking, you know what I mean, like I want moments to where you don't even know what the fuck I'm saying, you're just in tune with the song, and then of course the more you play it you start to find more pieces in there. So
I feel like that's the best form of artistry is like I find it so weird that things get labeled as like certain cultures or like groups of people.
Exactly.
It should be for everybody. And like the best artist should be able to take from anything and everything. Like it shouldn't have a label. And even if like you don't take from it, or if like you get associated in something, it's just limiting. Like you're just trapped inside a box.
No, sir. And that was the hard part. Like just like being black and just being in the environment that I was in, like we were just so caught on this is what you're supposed to be. And hip hop as a whole is also a closed box community. And that's why I appreciate different artists who can bring other elements of other genres into hip hop to bring it back to show like this is not what life is. This is not it. There's so much more to it. And that's my next goal with my album, Damien, that I have coming out soon, man. Like, I want to show people my inspiration on all levels, you know, not just hip hop, but like really bring in the musicianship, the instrumentation, just an album that you can play from start to finish back when we could actually sit down and just not have to skip tracks, not have to shuffle it, just really experience the artist and their world and just take a time and take a break from reality for a quick second.
That's what I miss about like a lot of physical media. I don't know if you want to say that, but like,
go ahead.
It's so funny because like with a film, you can do it this way, but I don't know many people do. Like with a film, most people, you know, they may scroll their phone a little bit, but for the most part, you're like in that world for the hour and a half. Yes. And you're not like skipping scenes, but like with music, you might listen to an album once to get a sense of what songs you want to put in a playlist.
Of course.
A lot of people will just throw the album away once they like mine it for two or three songs.
Yeah.
I guess like I'm not here to tell anyone how to listen to what they want. Like that, I mean, they're free to do it, but it is wild to me that people don't sometimes give things a chance, because like there are movies, TV shows, albums that I'm sometimes not ready for at a certain period in my life. I may not have the maturity, I may not have the understanding, the worldview, the insight, whatever, or just the life, the years. And then I'll come back to it later and I'll be like, wow, this blows me away. Or I'll even revisit my favorite albums and be like, oh wow, I was really that into that. Okay. And like it doesn't make it bad, but it's like people change. You know, things change. And like it's wild that sometimes people don't give that, you know, album a fair shake all the way through, because it's a piece of art. Like that's kind of how it was designed.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say the same thing. Like I kind of get annoyed when I tell people like one of my favorite albums is Kendrick Lamar's To Pimp a Butterfly and Mars Volta's Francis the Mute. And those are two albums you need to listen to front to back. Like you can listen to songs in them, but like to get the whole like story, you got to listen front to back. And especially with those two albums, because they're both over an hour, almost an hour and a half.
Yes.
Daunting, like heavy things, especially A Pimp a Butterfly, super heavy, not conventional.
You know what's funny though? Like, so speaking of To Pimp a Butterfly, obviously love the album. Mortal Man came up on shuffle the other day when I was like running, and I was like, oh, I can't just like start with Mortal Man. Like, Mortal Man, like, I mean, to give you the insight, that's the ending of the album.
And the finale.
You have to get to that point. And I'm like, I don't feel like I've earned just the ability to just shuffle into Mortal Man. Mm-hmm. Like I need to listen through to then get to the headspace you need to be in to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
So then I like went home and just listened to the whole album.
No, dead ass.
It's like just because it came on shuffle on like a running playlist or something. And like that playlist was like years old, but I'm like, man, that's funny, because sometimes you'll hear one song and it'll take you back to the whole album.
Yo, Mama is my favorite song, man.
Yeah, dude.
Mama, like just the overall mood, and I think just my connection, you know what I'm saying? Just like losing my mom, and just the shit that he talked about, like I know everything, I know, you know what I'm saying? Just like you think you know, but then you always have that space you come back to humble yourself and realize like, oh damn, I don't know shit.
Yeah, I think Wesley's theory might be my favorite on that. Ooh, just because the first time I heard that, I was like, I never heard a song like that.
Yeah,
and like that's the start of the album, and it like blew me away right away.
Yep.
And then it goes into For Free, and it's like two tracks like I did not expect to hit me right away. But it's also the same thing with like Francis the Mute, because that's a hard album to tell people to listen to front to back, because the last song I think is 30 minutes, I believe, something like that. But it's broken up into like 8 parts, I think.
Damn.
But it's a daunting thing. And it might be a thing where people do need to go back, like you said. Like I did the same thing with a movie called Dead Man from Jim Jarmusch.
Yeah.
I saw it back in high school and didn't like it because I didn't get it. And then I revisited it in college and I like loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes you really do have to be in a certain place, you know, with enough experience to get to where you need to be to enjoy an album. And like, that's the other thing too. Like people have asked me just in the little bit of films I've made, like, why do you make films about these serious subjects? Like, you know, and you know, obviously I blend comedy in it because that's more close to life. Like life is not one note, but you know, like sometimes a film is not always there to entertain you. It is there to challenge you. You might be entertained by elements of it. But like, you know, albums that are super deep and crazy, people think like, oh, I couldn't get into it because I don't see myself listening to it every day. Well, maybe that album isn't really designed to be listened to every day. Maybe that's that album you pull out when you need it, or when you need to kind of access that headspace. Like, I think people sometimes just think about art and entertainment is one thing, and they can blend But, you know, sometimes I listen to a song to be entertained. Sometimes I listen to a song for art. There's nothing wrong or better about one or the other, but it's just different.
I think we just got to do a better job of just letting art be.
I had a whole episode, like a long time, like maybe 2 years ago at this point, where I was talking about art versus entertainment and how they can blend. But there are things where you look at it just as entertainment or you look at it just as art.
Mm-hmm.
I think I compared like Transformers to like Stalker or like some high art film or something like that.
Yeah.
You want to know what's funny? I just had this conversation yesterday. So I watched Kong Skull Island for the first time yesterday.
That's directed by a Columbia alumni too.
Yeah. And you know, it knows what it is. It's a big dumb monster movie. And I love that because it's not trying to be this deep philosophical thing that also has people knocking over buildings and like doing dumb things that go, you know, completely against the philosophy it's preaching. Like, it knows kind of what it is. It's not the best movie in the world, but like I like when things are secure in what they are and don't take themselves, you know, seriously if they don't need to.
And if
something does need to take itself seriously, I like when it kind of leans in that direction. And you know, you can obviously blend things, but you know, I just think again, like there is something to be said about like knowing what you are and is an artist or an art, you know, piece, and just being confident about it. Because I think like the problem with Transformers is there is probably a world, maybe without Michael Bay directing, but like where those movies could have been something crazy and like, you know, not taking themselves seriously. Like you compare that to like a Mad Max. Mad Max works because it knows what it is. Transformers, right. You know, it's kind of fun, I guess, but like it's like trying to be campy but also super serious about like the stakes of humanity and philosophy at the same time. You know, it's like trying to do two different things that are competing, and I think that's what kind of
do the voice again
the stakes of my phone number for voiceover work it no.
All right.
Michael Bay.
Wait. Oh shit. Tim, was the Mars Vulture, is it a cover of somebody with like a red mask?
Yep.
Oh, so I was in a record store one time and I played the vinyl, bro. And I think the third track, Le Via Le Vieques or some shit like that.
It hits hard. That one hits hard.
Oh. You're right.
Everyone in the record store is like.
No, I'm dead ass like this. Like,
yep.
That's because there are like songs like that one. And the first one, I think you can play. Because they go hard.
Yeah.
And then there's like the slower ones where it's like them doing their jazz like improv.
Yeah, that was like Khan. What was the Khan? I forgot the name of that shit, but it's like towards the end.
Yeah, Cassandra, something like that.
No, that was a Cassandra Gemini. I remember that one.
Well, that one is the one song, but it's split up into eight parts. So there's like names for all the parts, but the overall song is Cassandra.
So that's the one you were talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I need to check that out. Because I remember the names because it stood out to me. But the one I played was, like I said, Le Vieques or something like that.
Because what I was reading about the album that makes it so great, too, is the guitarist, I think it's Omar Rodriguez. Mm-hmm. He approached it like Miles Davis, where he wrote like the whole album, but he would only play it with one musician at a time, and the other musicians wouldn't know the other parts. And then he pieced it all together.
Yo, that's crazy. Miles Davis, that's one of my favorite albums, Bitches Brew.
Yep. I love guys. I think he used that as the influence too.
Yeah, because that was like when he introduced Jazz Fusion, bro.
That Bitches Brew is one of the best albums.
Like, oh my gosh. And Santana Abraxas.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that the covers for both projects was a Venezuelan dude?
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was the same guy who made Bitches Brew and Abraxas from Santana, bro.
That's cool.
Yeah. I can see that now that you're. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I can see that now.
Yeah. But no, he loved like black women, bro. He just loved black women. He kind of like was just like, yo, had like a goddess theory in his mind. You know what I mean? And just with his art, that's how he would kind of just create shit, bro. And I thought that was dope. Like a whole Venezuelan dude, like loving black culture. I was like, that shit is fire. But for him to like do both covers, man. That's dope.
That's something that attracts me to music too, is if your album cover like pops or like it's so unique, like I'm gonna check it out. Like, yeah, no matter what the genre is, like if that album art stands out to me, like I'm grabbing it.
Yeah. It was crazy that you say that, because I'm actually leaning towards like streaming is different now. You know how you can see the cover, and usually now or before you would have the title of the song, the artist, and then, you know, the production. Mm-hmm. I'm actually leaning more towards focusing on pictures now. You know what I mean? Because the information is already there for you on what's needed. You don't really need the cover art to refer to like who made the song and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think like I'm just like now referring to just dope pictures, and I'm collaborating with like local artists around me, and I'm just like, yo, like listen to the song, whatever comes to mind, draw it, and then, you know what I'm saying, let's use it as a cover art. And well, I'm gonna just see how that goes.
I think like doesn't To Pimp a Butterfly, that's there's no words on the cover.
No words. It's just literally just a photo. But I love shit like that, because it's just like a lot of times when I do listen to music, I stare at it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I just like to stare at the visual. And I think usually when it's just a picture or just, you know, no words, it's more interactive, it's more visual with the music, because it's like you kind of just dive into it in a sense, and you're like, oh shit. But like with the words and then, you know, just produced by yada yada and da-da-da-da-da, you know, it's just, it's cool, but it's just like,
It's like two of the albums that come to mind that I love, like in recent times, their artwork is from Clipping, is there existed an Addiction to Blood and Visions of Bodies Being Burned, how like they're two, the albums go together, and so does the album art, and that's all you need.
Mm-hmm. No, seriously, bro. But yeah, man, I'm just trying to expand the overall culture, especially within hip hop, bro. Just bring in and show that we are expanding, you know, and just learn as much as I can and just bring it back home.
That's great. Trying to think of where to go from here now.
Man, we covered everything.
Yeah, we covered a lot.
That was a great tangent, though. I love
it. I love shit like this, though.
We covered a lot. That's like the last two episodes I've done of this show is like, especially the last one, I had no plan going into it, and it was like almost 2 hours just talking about everything.
Yeah,
dude, quarantine will do that to you. I'm like, wow, I actually get to talk to people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it feels like we're hanging out right now. Yeah, and I'm low-key happy because I'm like, oh shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's probably been the best part about like doing this podcast too, is like through Zoom calls and stuff, is like I could still talk to people and still keep the show going
in the comfort of your own home, bro.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I did. I revived my podcast, Convincing Creatives, a few months ago, and we talked to each individual member of Panda Barrett's cast and crew.
Yeah,
almost everybody actually, and each person got their own episode, and it was just me and that person talking. You know, a little bit about their character, their crew role, a little bit about set, but really more just kind of like this. We would talk about like what inspires them as an artist, creative, you know, stuff. I mean, it was fun. Like, and I'm like, man, I need to actually revive that and just get that going again.
You should, man.
Yeah, dude.
Like it's a wave, bro. Like I really like this. I appreciate. Honestly, in my introverted side, is just like freaking out because I'm like, yes. I don't have to go out in public,
dude.
You know what I mean? Yeah, I'm not even gonna lie. Like,
but you know what's funny is like I have found that's one thing. This is a big tangent, but like the one thing quarantine really showed me is like, yes, I'm an introvert, but I'm not as much of an introvert as I thought.
Same.
And I don't think anyone is 100% one thing or 100% the other. I think it's like a mix and a spectrum of where you fall.
Yeah.
That's what I thought too, because I'm like a very much introvert too, and I have to host a show.
Yeah.
So it's like me being that, it's like going out of my comfort zone for that, but it's also like I've come to the mentality of if I want to do something, I have to go do it. I just can't wait. Or like stay quiet. Like I gotta go do it.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And extroverted introverts. That's what we are.
Pretty much.
You do even exist. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like most filmmakers are introverts, or at least writers. Mm. But like as a director, you have to be somewhat extrovert.
You do.
Yeah.
So
it's a weird blend, man. Like that's a good point. Like I think a lot of people, the guy who directed Shazam. Do you remember?
Sandberg, David.
Yeah.
David.
Do you know how he has like a YouTube channel?
Yeah, that's where he did Lights Out as like a short film on there, and then it became a film.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And like that's the thing. He just made a video about like, can a director be introverted? And I found that video so interesting because like as a director and an introvert, I was like, he's talking about me. Mm-hmm. I see myself in that video. Like it was super cool because he was saying like basically yes, you have to be able to like plan things out, but at the same time, there are elements that introverts have that are very valuable to creative process. Because in order to be a good director, you know, Hollywood tells us you have to scream through a megaphone, but a good director listens to people. A good director knows when to shut up. Like, and that's like the type of thing I was like, yes, I'm glad someone is preaching that. Like,
yeah.
That just reminds me of, I just saw a video that my friend Arsenio sent me of David Lynch directing on set. And someone told him that he needed to cut a scene or like not shoot a scene. And he's like, are you fucking kidding me? And he like starts yelling at them.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm just like, only David Lynch.
Well, I mean, he can, I guess, get away with that because he's David Lynch.
But... yeah, this was like older David Lynch.
Yeah.
Like, he's so funny. Seeing his videos, like at the beginning of quarantine, he was doing the weather report from his basement.
Yeah. Yep. I remember that.
It made me laugh every day.
Yep.
Yeah, because most directors, I've been on sets where there are directors who are like yelling like that, and
it's it was so funny. I'm sorry, bro. He really was in the basement.
He was like in his basement because he would be like doing it, and then he would like look up and be like, "It's about about 30 degrees Celsius, clear sunny day in Los Angeles, California."
Bro, he really did look up, just like. Yeah, that's about it.
Sometimes he would just walk off. He'd be like, "That's it."
Yeah,
dude, that man. I do. Oh, respect his hustle. He just will make whatever he wants.
Oh,
he's also someone that's just like, "I'm not gonna make movies anymore." And like for 10 years, didn't do anything.
Yeah,
it's like him and John Carpenter do the same thing. Well, like Carpenter just stopped and just plays video games now.
Oh shit. Dude,
that's a vibe too. I'm not gonna lie. I've logged some serious time into my Nintendo
I think
Switch.
He also just started a podcast, or he's like gonna get into podcasting, and he's like an 80-year-old man.
I love that. I love when
that's cool as fuck.
I love when people make a hard pivot and people say, "You can't do that. You're blah blah blah. You're known for this." And
Carpenter
like,
does everything.
Yeah.
Carpenter does music, movies. He's made comic books.
Yeah.
He does everything. Mm-hmm. He just did a Joker comic last year.
Dope.
I don't know if I don't know how many issues came out, but I got like one of them when it first came out.
I didn't even know that.
But like, that's what I aspire to be. Like John.
Yeah. Multi hyphenate.
Just like Carpenter. He is like my favorite in like filmmaker.
You really just get to move at your own time, man. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody can tell you shit. Cause even if like, you don't feel like doing one thing, you could just do another.
He's even like with him, he's a filmmaker I respect because if you look at his catalog, he made a film every year and then came out and was like, "I don't want to do this. I'm burnt out. Like, I don't like making movies anymore," because of like how much people expected from him.
Yeah.
But he just like knew when to like be like, "I'm done. Like, I don't want to do this."
Yeah. But the catalog speaks for it. So,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. His catalog is the whole like late 70s, 80s is stellar.
Bob.
Yeah, people have to watch out for burnout. Like, I feel like most people, that burnout comes for you either really early or really late. Because I think burnout weeds out a lot of people early, like whether you're music, film, or anything. Like, a lot of people will drop a project and then that'll be it. Like, I know a lot of people that just fall off after that. And it's if you get to that second one, I think that's an accomplishment because it's hard to do. Because, like, once you realize what goes into your film or your album or your video game or whatever you're making, like, you know what it's going to mean to do it again times two to make it better, times three to make, you know what I'm saying? Like, and that's kind of weird. It's a weird mindset.
It is.
People do fall off that way, and there's nothing wrong with it. Like, if it's not for you, it's not for you. But I mean, it's an interesting observation I've noticed.
That's why I felt bad with there's a director called named Josh Trank who did the Fantastic Four movie a few years ago. But I feel so bad for him because he had Chronicle come out, right? And everyone loved it. And then he had so much pressure on Fantastic Four. And pretty much that movie ruined his career.
He had Star Wars teed up and he lost it because of the job he did. Like, imagine.
Damn.
Like, having a Star Wars ready to go. And then because of how you acted, apparently it gets taken away from you. I wasn't there. I don't know the full story. I know something about, like, he had a house. Didn't you have like a bunch of dogs or
something like
something
that
in the house that got trashed or I don't remember what happened.
So it was like, because he also was constantly trashing who owned Sony Sony or Fox owned Fantastic Four.
Yeah, they
would
like rent a house for them or something. Yeah.
Uh huh. But like him, and it was just like a whole mess. Like him, he lost his film, and I think was it Colin Trevorrow who did Jurassic World lost the Star Wars movie, or
yeah,
he lost it. I think Rian Johnson lost his trilogy. I don't know what's happening with that.
Well, I think they realized.
Yeah, I heard about that, but I never heard what the fuck happened. Yeah.
It was like that.
Was weird.
Him and the Game of Thrones guys all were going to get a trilogy of films, and then they announced all the Star Wars projects, and that like that was not part of it.
I think they said we need to chill on the films, but then they like tripled down on the TV shows. Like people were like, "Oh, Baby Yoda times 100." Like
pretty much. There was a lot of things though. People were waiting for like the Obi-Wan series was going to be a movie. And then they saw Mandalorian was doing well, and they're like, let's just turn it into a TV show.
I can't wait for that.
Oh, same.
I love Ewan McGregor. And when they said Hayden Christensen was coming back as Darth Vader from Revenge of the Sith, yeah. I was like, okay, they're gonna do some either flashbacks or some trippy stuff.
Yeah.
It's like he's in a mask. Like, you know, anyone could play that.
Mm-hmm.
They could
fact that they brought him back. Yeah, I think that means something.
They could do what they did in like. Did you watch Rebels at all, or any of those animated shows?
I've seen all the Clone Wars. The Tartakovsky ones are my favorite. But I'm a big Samurai Jack guy.
Mm-hmm.
So Samurai Jack is like a major influence on me because of just the. And I'm getting off topic, but just like getting into the moments of silence in that show.
Mm-hmm.
I just adore how some episodes you wouldn't speak and it's like a kid's show. Yeah. So like kids have to have people saying dumb things every 10 seconds. Like, no, kids are smarter than you give them credit for.
Right.
Like, and that show didn't talk down to kids, which I appreciate. But no, I've also seen the like, you know, animated Clone Wars, the 3D animated ones.
Because
final season was pretty good.
Final season was good. Like the last four episodes were great. And I talked about last episode in particular. But I talked about this on the Star Wars episode I did last year, where like I felt some of the episodes in season 7 were like they led to nothing, or at least one story arc did. But in Rebels, there's a moment where like Vader's mask gets like kind of destroyed in half, and like Anakin's face is shown. So they could do something like
that. I've seen that GIF. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a really good moment in Rebels.
That could be cool.
I'm also looking forward to the Ahsoka show after Clone Wars and Rebels with her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to man, I could talk about this for you have to watch it with me because I you may think that I am this, you know, indie film guy, and I am.
Mm-hmm.
But if you talk to me about either Star Wars or Nintendo games, I will turn into a nerd in like 3 seconds and I won't shut up. So
no, but that's what makes things dope, you know what I mean? To where it's like people only see a certain side of you, but when they see that you're a fan as well, I think that's what creates quality content with whatever it is that you're doing and whatever platform you choose to do it on. You know, as long as people can see that it's genuine and you're like, oh shit, like he's an actual guy, like that's what makes it better, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's like at film school, it annoyed me when people, like some of the kids would be like they wouldn't like Marvel or they wouldn't like Star Wars because it's too mainstream, and they would say that, and it's like, you're just sounding pretentious and stop.
Yeah,
I hate people
like they're sounding like a cliche.
Yeah,
I know exactly what you're talking about, and I have seen the same thing, and I love an A24 film. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
But
I
know who you're talking about. It's people who are like, well, I only watch A24 movies. I don't associate with Marvel.
Or they're like, I only like foreign films. Like I only watch foreign films.
Yeah.
It's like I was saying earlier with the freaking...
Why do I know somebody like that? What the fuck?
Everyone knows somebody that. I mean, for better or worse, like, at the very least, it shows you kind of, like, what not to be in a way. Like, I mean, look, people like what they like. I've said that before. But, like, it's like I said before earlier in the podcast with the King Kong thing. Like, that's not the best movie in the world. That movie is very forgivable. But I like that when I was watching it, it took me out of my life for a minute. And it knew what it was. It was big, dumb fun. And like, that's okay. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, everything can be what it can be.
That's what I love. Cause like, I think people probably thought that of me sometimes. Cause I watch a lot of like foreign films, art films. And like, like I watch a lot of those films, A24.
Oh,
but literally today I was watching Piranha 2, The Spawning from 1982 from James Cameron. And that film is trash.
Classic, but it's classic.
It's
trash,
classic, you know? Trash.
Yeah.
There is such thing as good trash.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Let's call it recycled.
Yep.
There is so much good trash.
Yep.
Like, one of my all-time favorites is Samurai Cop, and I love showing that film to people because they think I genuinely like it for the filmmaking, and I'm like, no, this is just good old trash. That it's film
like,
is.
So, like, as filmmakers, you guys, what would you guys consider good trash? Like, how do you define good trash in your own definition?
I think for me, good trash is... it would be a filmmaker who went into it with like the best of intentions, but the product ultimately became like unintentionally funny. But like you can tell they had heart into it, like versus a filmmaker who it's like versus a filmmaker who knows the film is going to be bad, but still makes it bad.
And that's like that second tier, what you said, you see a lot of that on Netflix.
Yeah.
Like you see a lot of films that like, they know it's bad, like,
but they're just going to put it out.
They did it for a check. Like, and you can have fun. You can have fun on set. You can have fun watching the movie and how bad it is. Like, you know, if you've had a couple, like, you know, you can do that. But I think you're right. It's that first tier, like The Room, the Tommy Wiseau film. Like, I mean, that whole film, he thought that was his masterpiece.
He spent like he spent how many millions of dollars on it?
Millions. Like he went into bankruptcy or something. Like he really went into that film thinking that was like his gift to Earth and humanity. And obviously that film is just, I mean, objectively not good, but I think like he has embraced what it has become. And now he's like, oh yeah, it's, you know, it is what it is. I'm not going to say if it was this or that, even though we all know what it originally was intended to be. He allowed the cultural, I don't know, lexicon of humans to just interpret his art, and I actually kind of like that because he just rolls with it. Like
it's the same thing with like Samurai Cop, because the story behind that is the guy was like really trying, and the end result became a Lethal Weapon ripoff. But I watched that more than Lethal Weapon. But with Samurai Cop, like I've seen interviews with the actors, they're all like goofing around with each other trying to make the best of it. But the lead actor, like it was his first role or like his breakout role. He thought he would become a star after this. He had long hair. The director told him they finished shooting. So he cuts his hair only for the director to say, we have 75% of the movie to shoot. So they bought a woman's wig, and you can definitely tell when he's wearing a wig and when he's not. And even there's a fight scene where the guy grabs his head and the wig comes off, and it stayed in the movie.
And they had to cut it.
No, it stayed in the movie.
Oh, it did. Oh, shit.
For like a second,
that's even better. That's cool as fuck.
Samurai Cop is like a treasure in my like physical media Blu-ray copies. It's a treasure.
Damn. So it's like for you guys, it's like people who you know doesn't give a fuck, but it's just doing it for the love of it.
Yeah, that's how I would probably say. Like that's how you can tell. Because it's like
it's kind of like a punk attitude about it. It's like, I know it's bad, or I know it was going to be good, but it ended
still
up bad.
Do
I was,
it.
It's like, and I was comfortable enough to just like
release it.
That's the thing with art. Yeah, exactly. You have to release it. You have to like people. The problem with a lot of artists is a lot of artists, like you just hug your film. It's like an overprotective parent. Like you have to let it go at a certain point and either do the next thing or just let it be interpreted. Like you can't interpret your own movie for the world.
And like,
so it's like you appreciate the authenticity.
Yeah.
Like if it has heart and soul into it, but just the end result didn't work. Like I'm going to respect that. Like I respect you. Like your film may be bad and like hilarious, but at least you had a vision and you released it out to the world versus like, again, like those Netflix movies, people would just do it for a check or even like, it's like something like the Emoji Movie. Like I still find that movie hilariously bad, but that movie's just a paycheck for everybody.
For sure.
Or it's even like, even in good movies, but like maybe a bad performance, you could tell like an actor might have just been doing it for a check.
Yeah.
It's something like that. It's like if you watch something and it gives you a sour taste, that's how you know it's probably like not genuine.
Yeah.
Versus like the so bad they're good films where like, okay, they were trying to do this. It just didn't work out.
Yeah.
Oh, my bad. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I'm sorry to keep, I promise the Kong Skull Island people are not paying me to talk about this. I just watched it. I just literally watched it yesterday, so it's on my mind. But there was like a part, I don't even remember what exactly it was, but like someone was like, how did we survive that helicopter crash. I don't even know how we're alive. And like Brie Larson was just like, I legitimately don't understand. This makes no sense. And they're just like self-aware in the film. And like, I just kind of liked, you know what I'm saying? That kind of vibe.
Yeah.
Or even like, cause I was just watching Piranha 2. James Cameron technically directed the film, but he's gone on and said that like he was locked out of the editing room and like all this stuff. Like he had no control over it. Cause it was, I think it was a Roger Corman produced movie. But like James Cameron jokes about Piranha 2 because he knows it's not good. He knows it's trash. Like that's hilarious. That was like an example. I was literally watching it. In the first 5 minutes, I was on my phone for a second. And in the first 5 minutes, I look up and people are having sex underwater in scuba gear. And I like looked away for a second and I was like, what happened?
What the fuck?
That's the opening of the movie.
That's hilarious.
That's the first.
And then he made Avatar.
Right after it. Well, because that's why he says Terminator is his first movie. I'm pretty sure he doesn't want people knowing it's Piranha 2.
Probably.
Yeah.
But it is Piranha 2.
Just to put it out there.
James Cameron, we all know.
He's listening.
We know it's not a secret.
We know what you did, James.
We all know, but we all respect the hustle. So
he puts Piranha 2 Easter eggs in every film. Like in all the Avatar sequels, there's going to be a reference.
Yeah. Maybe
two avatars having sex underwater.
Didn't he like chart that like submarine?
That, yeah,
like the bottom of the ocean, like 7 miles down or something crazy.
Yeah, wasn't
humans had never been.
So he and I'm did
like,
it?
Yeah, I feel like this dude just has a thing with water, man.
He does.
Yeah,
and the Titanic.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. He did the
Did Titanic? What else did he do? I feel like it's just everyone knows him for Avatar now. Right. Avatar and Terminator.
And so Avatar I have a question. 2, whenever he's going to release that.
I wonder if he swims or he floats.
Oh, he's got to swim. If he's,
you think he's a swimmer?
I think he's got,
else did he get the inspiration to be like, I need to go down where human beings have never been? You know what I'm saying?
But I don't, is that that's swimming true. Or is that he sinking? Because he just,
well, it is sinking. But, you know, I bet he was in a pool one day when he was 7. And he was like touching the bottom. You know what I'm saying? He's like, his origin story is he's touching the bottom of the pool.
Not
and
it was 7.
Probably to get like, I don't know, a penny. You know how they like throw pennies in pool and they're like, go get it. Like, you're little. Like, maybe that's just me.
Yeah, James cares about to use that shit. Yeah.
He better license me. But yeah, I mean, I bet that's what it was. He was like, I did this, so now what's next? Oh, just go to the bottom of the ocean. So,
that's hilarious.
I just think of the South Park episode where James Cameron has to keep going to the... He has to keep raising the bar.
Exactly. So
he has to keep going down, like further down.
Comes out the other side of the earth, just like...
Oh, shit. Right.
That's James Cameron.
Gotta love it.
Well, I think we can probably wrap up the show soon, because I think you said... You had to go at like 7:30, right, Evan?
Yeah.
All right, we can wrap that up right here. We actually got pretty good, almost about 2-hour episode in.
Dope. I hope I gave you usable stuff.
Oh, it's all usable.
Sweet.
I can't wait until Disney tunes in.
I hope Disney tunes in. Walt, this is for you.
Right. Frozen or not, man.
Just for
it's
you,
a cold
Walt.
World. That's all hilarious. Right.
Thanks, guys, for coming on. This was a lot of fun.
Thanks for having us, man. 100%. This is therapeutic.
It was. It's good to talk to people, and yeah, appreciate you like highlighting Panda Barrett.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, everyone can check out Panda Barrett. It's on Amazon Prime right now.
Oh shit, that's why we're here.
Yeah. I want you guys.
We weren't here to talk about James Cameron.
Right.
That's it. Yeah. Before we go, I'll let you guys promote your movie and anything else you have going on.
Oh shit. Go ahead, take the floor, E.
Yeah, well, if you didn't know, we have a movie. It's called Panda Barrett. It's on Amazon Prime. You can watch it there. And let us know what you think. It's also on Letterboxd. So if you want to leave a review, we just got that going. And so it's on Amazon in the US. So here's the thing. If you are outside of the US and you're locked out of Amazon, if you don't have a VPN that can get you in, shoot me a DM on Twitter. I'll send you a private screener if you will leave a review on Letterboxd. Doesn't have to be a good review, just what you honestly thought. Because I want people to experience the movie.
I think I got a couple listeners outside of America. I have one from France who's like consistently like one of the first people to listen. Okay. Yeah.
Well, dude, please shoot me a DM on Twitter. I'll hook you up if you want to watch the movie.
Yeah, it's a pretty dope movie.
Yeah, it's fun. You know, it's pretty cool. Camus wrote dope music for it. And it also, he is a musician. I mean, he could probably speak to this better than me, but y'all should also go check out all his music on, you know, all the streaming services because it's really good.
Yeah, there's this guy. His name is Camus Leonardo. And, like, he used to play a lot of Super Smash Bros. Still does. And, like, he just makes music, man. He's a pretty cool guy or whatever. You know, his music kind of sucks. He talks about French fries. I don't know why. But, you know, to each his own. I mean, you know, he thinks he's, like, cultural by calling it Papa's Fritas, but whatever, you know. This guy. No, I'm just joking. But, like, yeah, guys, tune in to my music. I go by the name of Camus Leonardo, Camus Leonardo. The type of music that I make, man, I just like to talk about life and just another way for people to grow with me, man. I don't like to tell people what to do. Don't have all the answers. Don't know shit. I'm still learning myself, but there is a possibility we could probably figure this shit out together. As far as the movie, Panda Barrett, directed, written by the homie Evan Kidd, very talented dude. That is available on Amazon Prime. Y'all make sure y'all send him a DM because I don't know anything about the VPN and all that good shit. But you can't still send me a DM. I speak. I'm not like weird or anything like that. We could talk, chop it up. You know, if your English is good, that's tight. You could even teach me your language. That'd be even better. But yeah, also check out Evan's other films on Amazon Prime too, man. Like, although we are promoting Panda Bear, check out Sons of Clowns. That's also available on Amazon Prime as well. And shout out to Tim for having us on his platform.
Yes.
We got to talk about everything across the world, man. And this is like our first time even seeing each other in person, but yeah, we still haven't talked.
Literally like the first time.
Yeah. Like, we always text, but like face to face is nice. Like,
but you guys, this is the power of social media. Just make sure you utilize it to your advantage, man. Like, I know a lot of people are like, oh, social media is this and that. I mean, it is, but this is the good side of it. Mm-hmm. You get, you know, people from three different backgrounds to come together and find common interest on from James Cameron to fucking Disney to everything to like it's just That's Star Wars happens. You know what I mean, but it just shows you that you're not alone and there are people out here, man, no pun intended.
So. I see what you
plug the
know.
Single
okay come yeah, on
that's,
man
that's his song he wrote, man, so y'all check out You're Not Alone on all streaming platforms. All right, I need to stop because we're promoting too much stuff.
Yeah,
well, you have your evening.
Sam, what you got to promote, bro?
I just got my show to promote. You can check us out on Instagram and Facebook at Lighting Up the Marquee. You can listen to us anywhere you listen to podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Stitcher, and other places. I just don't know the other ones.
Yep.
You also have, under Camus Leonardo, you have Time Is On Our Side was your newest single, correct?
Yes, sir.
Check all those out. Check out all of his albums.
Oh, I'm actually dropping a single every Tuesday until the album comes out.
Okay. So be on the lookout for that. Good music, good movie. Go check out Evan. Go check out Damien. This was a lot of fun. We'll have to get you guys back on the show. Nice, we'll have to figure out what to do.
Let us know.
Can we just like
James Cameron?
Can we just talk shit the next time we come on here? Because I dead ass forgot we were supposed to like promote the movie and stuff. But I just want to get on here and just bash. Like, I don't know why. I don't mean to sound negative, but like, let's talk our shit next time we come on here. I think
talk all shit. Cool. Who are we gonna talk all shit about?
Just
in general,
we need to rate the different French fries and like trash the trash ones and hype up the good,
like
ones.
Crinkle cuts or steak fries.
Like, go to all the fast food restaurants and get fries.
We'll just have a whole fry episode, just like rating them, review it.
No, seriously, I'm with it.
The problem is, I say things and I mean them.
Oh, or we can have clowns. It's rate like the best clowns and the worst clowns, like Pennywise and shit like that. Like
Ronald McDonald.
Pennywise can stay in the gutter.
And he met that shit, ladies and gentlemen.
All right, I gotta wrap this show up.
Told you, we'll go on forever, man.
Yeah. We would go on forever.
Yeah.
I gotta wrap it up. We'll get you guys back on the show at some point and we'll keep this going.
Thank you for having us, bro.
Yeah, thank you for real. I appreciate it. And
thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. And then until next time, I'm your host, Tim Martin. This has been Lighting Up the Marquee.
want to give a shout out to my family who didn't push me away. Rhonda, Marcus, Grandma, Destiny, this is for y'all. These the type of moments that I live for. Chilling with my cousin Marcus, talking about our passions. Told him in order to start that you gotta take action. Watch out for the programs to make you our passive. United we stand, together they fall. Always shooting for the stars, so that's why I stand tall. They wanna dim your light down when they know you got glow. Then they dap you up in public just to do it for show. You too busy playing games when I'm trying to own some teams. Getting paid just to watch you from the press box. I'm still humble enough to put some work in the field. Shit is real, niggas getting murked over meals. Work a couple 9 to 5s just to pay all my bills. But I'm still my own boss cause I stay on my shit. Never let a hater tell you you should settle and quit. Just let it all propel you to the top, homie. And know that you're not alone. 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 You trying to make history or a story? 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 It's been a minute since she heard me rap. I apologize for letting fear take control. So many years of self-doubt that it stopped my growth. But now it's go time, so it's me with that bullshit. It's so hard to say goodbye to your heart and soul. I may smile, but my heart is hurting every day. So many people trying to figure out my next move. I'm working well under pressure, keep it Rhonda guessing. Taking all these shots, trying to run away. Coming home to granny, she know I'm going through it. And despite my bad habits, I still keep it real. Cause I always tell the truth, even when I lie. Judge a man by his choices, never by his past. Wanna learn, never lose, but I'm built to last. It's me against the world, now I'm all alone. I talked to Destiny, she told me that you're not alone. 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 You're not alone, 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 you're not alone. Well, you tryna make history or a story. 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 Yup. You know what's crazy? A lot of people can live their whole lives as a caterpillar. If a caterpillar doesn't become a butterfly, that shit dies. So what do you want to be? A butterfly or a caterpillar? Fly away from the bullshit, man. You're not alone. You're not alone. You're not alone.